are all authentic Liverpoolians and speak with the broad Lancastrian dialect which is called Scouse. They came together, George Harrison, John Lennon, Paul McCartney, and a fourth boy named Pete Best in Liverpool. But like most of the groups in Liverpool, they served their apprenticeship in Hamburg, the German seaport town which is almost an exact copy of Liverpool, except that it has more nightclubs. These night spots along the wild and uninhibited Reeperbahn in Hamburg are the incubators for these musical groups. For a while, there was a fifth Beatle too, Stuart Sutcliffe, a haunted, poetic-looking youth who died tragically of a brain tumor 2 years ago, just when the Beatles were on the brink of their success. The Beatles were discovered by a shrewd young record store manager, Brian Epstein. Epstein insisted on one change. He replaced Pete Best with Ringo Starr, now the group's drummer. The reason for the change is still something of a mystery, even to Pete Best, who is now heading a small, unsuccessful group which plays around the local spots in Liverpool.
We've heard some Americans describing this phenomena. I think it's about time we hear from the British and the Beatles themselves. Here is BBC correspondent Dibbs Mather.
Before the Beatles set out to conquer Paris and New York, I caught up with them on the road in Doncaster, in the industrial north of England. And while a crowd of 2,000 teenagers screamed ecstatically inside the theatre, I forced my way through the stage door and talked with the Beatles in their dressing room. And there they were, long hair, elastic-sided boots, the lot.
Ringo Starr, it's been suggested that boys coming from the particular area that you come from, if you hadn't found an interest in music, might have found it much more difficult to get out and make a go of life. Would you comment on this?
I think it's true, you know. I mean, when I was 16 and that, you know, I used to walk on the road, you know, with the rest of the lads, and we'd have all our drape coats on and just, you know, we've had a few narks and that with other rival gang sort of thing. But then I got the drums and the bloke next door played a guitar and I got a job.
Teddy boy!
And we started playing together, and another bloke in work made a bass out of an old tea chest, you know, in them days. This was about 58, mind you. And we played together and then we started playing on dances and things, you know, and we took an interest in it. And we just stopped going, you know, out of sort of hanging around corners every night.
You don't mind being such a very public property with no private time at all?
Well, you get accustomed to it and, you know, after a while it's just, you just take it for granted and you just do everything automatically, like signing autographs and waving at people.
What about home life with your own family? Do you ever get any these days?
Yeah, occasionally. So once every fortnight we manage to get home.
What about the wealth that comes with this kind of success? Has that made a great deal of difference to the way you live and the way your family live?
No, it hasn't made, not so far, it hasn't made any difference, except for holidays and things like that. You know, we can just get the money out of the bank and go wherever we want.
And you're one of the reputed deep thinkers of this group. How do you see it as a peak in your life? What happens to you after this is over?
Well, I suppose we'll stay doing this sort of stuff for a couple of years. Naturally we won't be able to stay at this level, but we should have another 2 years at least, I think.
Then what happens to George Harrison then?
I don't know. I'll know by the time that comes along. Probably have a little business or something like that.
You don't want to go on in the profession?
Probably, yeah. I'd like to make records, you know, with other artists. I don't mean perform, I mean as a producer.
The technical part.
Mm. But I don't know, you can't really tell at this stage.
Paul McCartney, you were one of the original Beatles. Where did the name Beatles originate?
Well, Dibbs. John thought of it first of all, just as a name, just for a group, you know. We just didn't have any name. We did have a name, but we had about 10 of them a week, you know. We didn't like this idea, so we had to settle on one particular name. And John came up with the name Beatles one night. And he sort of explained how it was spelt with an EA, and we said, oh yes, it's a joke.
Since when it's come to represent a large section of the young population called the Beatle people. Do you people regard yourself as leaders of this particular group?
No, we're not leaders of any sort of a group. The thing is, people always say, Well, you started great trends and things, but in actual fact, all that we've done is gone along with the trends. And if, in going along with it, we sort of encouraged other people to go along with a couple of our ideas, you know, all very well, but we haven't tried consciously to start anything like a trend, you know.
It said, John Lennon, that you have the most goon-type humour of the four Beatles.
Who said that?
I think I read it in one of the newspapers.
Oh, you know what the newspapers are like,
No, what are they like?
Wrong.
This is going wrong. I want to get a nice personality bit.
I haven't got a nice personality.
You were interested in poetry at school.
Who said?
It's printed in a book compiled by the Beatles and entitled The Beatles.
I haven't read that book. We don't normally write those things.
Written any good comic poems lately?
Yes, sir.
I just happen to have here by sheerest coincidence.
Dressed in my brown... Oh, no, I've lost it. Hold on. I can't read it, see, I've only just written it. Well, that's how it starts, actually. Dressed in my teen old brown sweater, I easily mixed with the crowd at Neville Club. I see me whole. Soon, all but soon, people acoustic me saying such thing as, "We're the charge, man." I'm turning over. All too soon, I notice boys and girls sitting in a hobbled lump, smoking hernia and taking Odeon and getting very high. Some were only 4'3" high, but he had Indian hump, which he grew in his sleep. But things like that just help me keep sane.
Is this business enough to drive you insane?
No, I'm quite normal, really. If you read in the Beatle books, it says I'm quite normal.
The Beatles snatched their guitars, went on stage. I was left alone in the dressing room with only a few empty teacups to keep me company. The music might be country and western, but the Beatles are very, very British. And this is Dibbs May, the reporting from the BBC in London. And this is WINS New York.
We'll shake it up, baby, now.
Shake it up, baby.
Twist so fine.
Come on and twist a little closer now.
Yeah, baby, twist and shout. You're twisting and shouting with the Beatles. And listen, we've heard the Mersey sound. We found out where it started. We've also learned about the Beatles themselves. And by now, most everybody agrees they're what's happening, baby. They are what is happening. And that's why this combination of Beatles and sound has become the topic of conversation with just about everybody, from Princess Margaret, a Beatle fan, to housewives over the back fence, from screaming teenagers to the music critic of the London Times, and this I've got to hear.
What serious musicians find interesting about the songs of Paul McCartney and John Lennon, which the Beatles sing, is that they are music as well as pop. The addicts of pop are perfectly happy if the Beatles make a tremendous noise and sing what the French call le yé-yé. But serious musicians in this country are also intrigued by the musical eventfulness of their songs. For instance, the whole musical character of their number, All My Loving, depends on the placing of unusual chords in the refrain and on the disjunct stepwise motion of the melody and the bass, starting from the pugnacious interval of a tritone, moving closer and then tearing apart in different directions. And the flash point of I Want to Hold Your Hand is an octave jump that sounds about 6 foot high, because a simple half cadence in the relative minor has been thought out quite afresh, as if nobody had ever got it right before.
Now, what he said is probably right, because I didn't understand him, but it's perfectly all right, because he speaks English. Mr. William Mann is probably right, but it can be said a lot simpler, I believe, than that. This is the way British teenagers put it.
Well, they've got their individual suits and hairstyles, which they sort of arrange themselves in their own kind of music. And, oh, I just think that's fabulous.
Well, they came from Liverpool, and they have the Liverpool accent, which is one of the main things that has contributed to the success. And it's the beat, mainly, called the Mersey beat, which, well, if you listen closely, you can hear the bass guitar thumping the same beat for most of the songs.
Sometimes some parents put them down.
Oh, it's appalling. One's whole life is changed by this adolescent nitwit.
A woman reacts at the Plaza.
I think that they are very alive, which is an attribute today when so many people just don't seem to have the verve that they have and the enjoyment of life each day, you know, as it is. I think the world needs something like that.
My antagonist of the open-end program, a disc jockey at another New York radio station.
And I think in reciprocity for some of the bad rock and roll we've sent over to England, England has a perfect right to send us the Beatles.
A British psychologist talks about the Beatles phenomena.
I think you can wrap this up in a lot of psychological jargon. But I think one of the big reasons is that initially that the sound is certainly a very appealing one, but this is only half the message. I think the message why it's so appealing to these young people now is the element of sameness that the teenagers and even younger than teenagers in this country seem to want to have. In other words, it's a status symbol, the same way as having a car is a status symbol to a more adult population. With this population, the status symbol is to rave about a particular sound. And if you don't do this, you're really not with this group at all, and they don't want to know about you.
Jim Gordon got this reaction outside the Plaza.
Crazy. Really, I mean it. You know, I visited my daughter in London, and her husband is a major there. And she said, you want to see these people? I said, yes, but mother, you know, mother. So I said, fine. And you have no idea how they look. Everything they move, it makes no difference. Hands, feet, head. Well, I never saw anything so exciting. And I'm pretty old, you know.
The director of the BBC's orchestra evaluates the Beatles this way.
Gimmick 60%. Haircuts 30% and music 10%.
The British Beatles fan club president.
Well, I mean, they can hear them on the records and they know what songs they're going to sing, and they're so tensed up. They've got to scream. You know, just think, well, they think to themselves, oh, I've got a ticket to see the Beatles. That's just fantastic. I mean, they've queued for hours now.
And an American psychologist.
I think most youngsters, particularly the adolescents, the late ones, are so concerned about what they're going to be doing within the next few years, what to make of their lives, what kind of place they're going to find in this world outside. And they're not certain that they're going to make it. And the anxieties that they've had for a long, long time, I think they're sort of half men and or half adult and half children. And sometimes they aren't certain which, because there aren't too many reference points for them. And I think these very extreme anxieties that they feel inside spill over into this kind of behavior. It's one area that seems to be all theirs, and they can let go and exhibit exaggerated reactions that they have learned and they see all around them. You know, adults listen to these things and they applaud and whatnot, but the kids have to, they have to seize upon it with a vengeance, and they have to let go with all the energy they have inside, all the anxieties that have been stored up. And it's an explosion, really.
You can look at it psychotic, you can look at it neurotic. You can work it out as calmly as you like, or as I have said at times, you can maintain your cool about it. But it always results in something like this.
What confusion here at London Airport. Hundreds and hundreds of young Beatle fans shouting, yelling, waving umbrellas and hats, shouting for their heroes, the four young men in dark clothes who've just disembarked from the huge white and blue twin jet airliner which has flown them from Stockholm. There's a crowd of photographers at the back of the plane. All the passengers came out first. This caused mounting excitement.
Now, through all the mayhem, the calmest people of all are the Beatles themselves. Now, here they are in Paris just a week or two ago with WINS correspondent Bernard Redmond.
How do you fellows account for your phenomenal success? George, I'll take that.
Well, I think a lot of reasons, a lot of different reasons, like at the time we made our first record, I think in England the public were waiting for a different sort of sound mm-hmm. to the type of record they'd had, and then we also came on with sort of funny haircuts, our own original songs, and I think all different reasons like that all together helped.
Well, how do you describe the kind of sound that you produce? What is it exactly? How does it differ from other performers?
It's loud. Yeah, well, it's louder now. It's more like the older sort of rock and roll from 5 years ago than the music that they used to have in England, say, a year ago, which was more ballad sort of stuff.
You know, the French call anyone over 21 a coulant. I don't know whether you've heard that expression since you've been in Paris.
What's it mean?
That means somebody who's crumbling into dust already. That's what my daughter sometimes calls me.
Can you speak up, please?
Some of us croulants are always astonished at the wails and screams and sighs and sometimes riots of the teenagers who come to listen. Now, how do you feel about these reactions yourselves?
We love it.
You love
it? Yeah, of course.
It doesn't bother you at all?
No, it doesn't. Because we're loud enough, you know, we can hear what we're playing. The good thing is the atmosphere, you know, that sort of noise creates in the theatre. It's good, because if you get the idea that they like your kind of music, and that they're shouting and screaming, well, it helps you to do it. You know, you put more enthusiasm sure. into it.
It doesn't bother you, then?
No, we love it.
But where do you think you're headed in the future? I mean, in a figurative sense, as to say, what do you see as your career? How long do you think it's going to last?
Well, we don't know how long it's going to last. You know, no one can tell. We hope it lasts a couple of years, you know, because we all love what we're doing. But if it dies down, you know, and we go back to playing just in Merseyside, the clubs, I think we'll carry on playing because we just love playing, you know.
Well, do you look forward to your American appearances? Have you thought about America much?
Yeah, we think about it all the time, don't we? Can't wait.
That was what they said then. And they are here, Lafayette baby. They are here now. John, tell me a little about yourself and a little about, you know, what you expect to be doing while you're here.
A little about myself. Well, I'm full because I've just eaten and I've just arrived here, and we hope to just do the Ed Sullivan show at the Carnegie Hall in Washington. I think that's all. And buy some records.
Tell us why. A lot of people have already said to me, boy, I bet you they can make $1 million if they want to stay here. Now, we know you've turned down Madison Square Garden. Can you give us the reason why you are doing so, you know, just holding your performances down to a minimum?
I don't know. I think our manager doesn't want to overexpose us, you know, so we can come back.
Well, fine, but you're going into a place which does have prestige, Carnegie Hall, but I think it only holds 1,200 people, as opposed to a Madison Square Garden that could hold 18,000. Is there any reason for that?
Well, Carnegie Hall was already arranged, you know, and then when all the other offers started coming in, well, we would have been overworked.
Well, you're very busy there too, isn't that right?
Yeah, very.
And now I guess this is more or less like you're going to take a little vacation, I understand?
Well, I think we get a couple of days off, you know, in Miami, so we can get some sun, if there is any.
Is there any one type of entertainment that you would like to get into as far as performing? Is it a concert? Is there records? Is it movies? What thing are you looking forward to best?
Yeah, well, we're doing a film when we get back to England from the States. And
for United Artists, right?
Yeah, and it's the first film for us, so that should be a laugh for a start.
Do you have any say in the preparation of the script or anything?
Yeah, it's
say no to everything.
You know, if we don't, the people who are making the film are very cooperative with us, and if we don't like any part of the film, then, you know, they're willing to cut it out and change it so that we'll like it, you know, because they want everybody to be happy.
Well, I can see that. I can see that there's a lot of impromptu, sort of ad libitum type of performance. I guess you'd like to bring that into your film, too?
Yeah, we'll try our best.
We'll have to. We can't learn the script.
Is this the first vacation you've had in how long?
This isn't a
vacation. You're joking, my word.
I mean, in Miami Beach.
Oh, well, we've only got two days, and I think that's going down to one day, as it is.
Well, what are you going to do in Miami Beach?
I don't know. Make sandcastles.
What did you say?
Like sandcastles.
Sandcastles.
Sandcastle.
I'm sorry. But you know something, for foreigners, you speak English very well?
Yeah. Well, it's a trick we learned since we were so high.
Well, listen, I want to thank you so much. I know you're tired, and all of us here at Winds are... Are you tired?
No, not really.
Hi.
Keep going. I am, George speaking. I'm very tired, you see, because I've been up for days.
Forever.
Hacking.
For days.
Yeah, sure.
Well, listen, but I want you to know when I tell you you're happening, you're happening. Now, as far as the romantic interest, and John has spoken for, I know, he's married, right?
Yeah.
And what about you, George?
Oh, I'm happy. No, you know, I'm... You see, I haven't got enough money for myself yet, never mind a wife.
You don't have enough money for yourself?
No.
Well, you know something? I'm not a reporter like people. They ask very personal questions. I wouldn't ask you personal questions. But I hear you fellas got it all made, as far as that's concerned, already.
It's just a dirty lie.
It is.
A rumor.
They say that each one of these boys is worth close to £1 million.
Gee.
Doesn't it sound... Well, at least let them think that way.
Well,
because
it sounds
good,
doesn't it?
Well, at least this way you can get credit. What is your main purpose, then?
Main purpose? Oh, in life. Don't know, really. I'm hoping to become a tramp someday.
A hobo.
You want? Yes, a hobo.
So I'm saving up, you see.
I see.
Because I want to be a rich hobo.
That's the best kind, baby. Yeah. Rich or poor, it's always good to have money.
Yeah.
Comedians, these Americans.
We thank you so much for being on the WINS with us.
It's okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right. Cheerio. Thank you.
Well, ta-da.
Oh, yes, why not?
Please, we won't dare let that please you.
And you heard before of our interview coming from the Plaza, an exclusive interview with the Beatles, the start of exclusive sounds of the Beatles on WINS 1010, including 2 hours and 30 minutes last night of the Beatles taking over the Swingin' Soiree show as disc jockeys on the Murray the K show last night. Now, with the Beatles obviously in the American market to stay, what is the reaction of American artists to the Beatles? Well, we asked Bobby Darin, what do you think about the Beatles?
I'm kind of knocked out by the blend of sounds, if I can get into that area, Murray.
Sure.
It seems to me they've fabbed a little from Duane Eddy, borrowed from the Four Seasons, and a kind of a surfing kind of sound as well. Locked them up in one package, and of course it's the way they sing with the four-part, it sounds to me like four-part unison. It's kind of a full, rich vocal quality, you know, and I'm all for it.
You like the sound itself?
Yeah, I love the sound. I think it's commercial, and as a man who loves the record business and the music business, I do. Anything that's going to create excitement for the record business in general and get people into stores again, the way Presley did a few years ago, I'm all for it.
We asked Nat King Cole, have you ever seen the Beatles?
No, I haven't, but actually when I was in London last summer, it was the first time I'd heard about them, because we went through the city where they supposed have started what they call the Liverpool music, which was in Liverpool.
The Liverpool sound.
There was a concert there, so I heard all the Londoners and the people from England are discussing the Liverpool sound. So I was anxious to hear this Liverpool sound, and when I heard it, it sounded like the old United States sound. You know, as far as I was concerned.
Well,
but it seemed to have caused quite a stir in Europe, and particularly in England. And so I was just as surprised as everyone else when I saw that they had cast their shadows across the great pond there.
Well, they did. They have cast it in no uncertain terms,
well,
and like nothing I've ever seen since the days of Presley.
Well, that's good, I guess. You know, in a way, for the business, it's good to see, you know, things come about.
Right.
You know, it's always good to see that new hot shot in the arm for the business.
Do they remind you of any particular group sound?
Yes, they sound like a million different types of groups, because, I mean, let's be honest, I don't think that they're doing anything that we haven't already created, you know,
right.
Over here as far as our own creation of rock and roll and rhythm and blues or whatever. You know, I would always say it would stem from the nucleus of what we presented. And I just think the sound is almost just practically just in more volume, that's all.
More volume, like to 4 points.
Actually, I mean, you
Everly
know,
Brothers.
We got the Everly Brothers, and we
right.
got all kinds of old industry.
Right, it shows
and
that they're
the
still alive.
The world to be. Furthermore, it's not what I think, it's what the people think, because they're buying them and they're selling out everywhere that I hear they're going, so that's the best thing about it.
Well, I think it helps the business too. And now we thank you for your reaction to what the Beatles.
Okay, Murray.
We then ask of Brenda Lee, what's your impression of the Beatles, honey?
As far as my impression of the Beatles, I met them, I think it was about a year and a half ago in Germany, and I thought they were very good. And as far as their sound, I like it myself. I think it's different. I saw them in Germany, and then I met them again in England when I worked over there. But they weren't as popular then, you know, as they are now. They were just coming up then. As far as, you know, watching them on stage goes, they're really good. They're a lot of excitement. They bring on, you know, I don't know what it is that they've got, but whatever it is, they're currently the rage around here.
And then Bobby Vinton. Bobby, tell me your reaction to the Beatles.
I think it's awful good for the music business. I think it's good for the record business. I think that because of this, the record business will pick up for everyone in the whole country. But as far as... Me knowing too much about them, I don't know that much about them. I'm anxious to see them.
What about from a performer standpoint? What do you think of their sound?
Well, from their sound, I think it's just I think it's about 8 years old. The truth, we had groups like that, you know, with that beat and that sound about 8 years ago. I think we're just going back to the old sound.
Do you personally like their sound?
Well, I don't dislike it. I'm
but
not
you
crazy
don't,
about it.
You don't
but,
think it's anything new?
I realize that the business today is very rough, and I give anybody credit who can come up with a hit idea and sell a lot of records like they do.
What started 18 months ago in a cellar in Liverpool has swept through Europe and now bombarded New York. How long will this whirlwind continue? No one can say. But Jim Anderson has some thoughts as he reports from Liverpool.
The Beatles have gone from success to success. Everything they touch turns to money. The horizon is limitless. And the only cloud in that golden vista is a tiny smudge, which is the legendary fickleness of the teenage market. The teenagers made the Beatles, and the teenagers could desert them someday, as they have deserted their other idols. The fanatic following is still there in England, but there's one slightly disturbing symptom. Here's the postman who delivers mail to the Beatles' office in a Liverpool street called Moorfields.
Mail here now for the Beatles is gradually easing off a bit. When they first came to Moorfields, it was tremendous.
Perhaps it's just that the English teenagers are jealous now that they have to share their idols with French and American teenagers. That's what the Beatles' management thinks. They say, just wait and see. The fan mail will be just as big as ever when the Beatles come back to this country. But even if they were to disappear today into the oblivion where ex-idols go, the Beatles will have left their mark on a whole generation who reserve the word fabulous as the special and only adequate description for the Beatles.
If they are jealous of sharing the Fab Boys with others around the world, they certainly have plenty to be jealous of, because America and Americans have taken the Beatles to their hearts.
I think they're great and they're wonderful.
Why?
Well, actually, it's a new kind of music that we've never had here. And it's just terrific. It really is.
But is it really music? That's what a lot of people wonder.
To us, it's music. To you, it might not be, but to us, it's music.
How about you?
There's a difference between skipping.
What's the matter?
I got George's autograph.
Is George one of the Beatles?
Yeah.
You're just ecstatic about the Beatles.
Oh, wouldn't you?
No.
They're all their own. There's nothing like them in the world. They've got their own sound and everything. They're just fabulous. And I was normal when I came here. I'm ripped apart now. My collar's ripped off my coat and everything.
1, 2, 3, 4! Well, she was just 17. Did you know what I mean? And the way she looked was way beyond compare. So how could I dance with another? Oh, and I saw Meet the Beatles was a special presentation of the Wynn's Public Affairs Department and was produced and directed by Julie Ross and Bill Rohrer. From New York, you heard Paul Parker, Jim Gordon, and Jerry Landay. From London, Rod McLeish. From Liverpool, Jim Anderson reporting, and in Paris, Bernard Redmond. Wynn's would like to give special thanks to the British Broadcasting Corporation for their assistance in this production of Meet the Beatles. This is Murray the K. Good night.
When I cross that room and I held her hand.